Hear ye, hear ye. This Honorable Appellate Court for the 2nd Judicial District is now back in session. The Honorable Mary S. Shostak presiding.
You can be seated. Thank you.
Excuse me. Your Honors, the third and final case on the docket this morning is 2-25-0561. Bear Gunn & Partners, Plaintiff Appellee, the Geneva Center 2015 LLC, Wakanda LLC, Defendants and Appellants. Arguing on behalf of the Appellants, Mr. M. Reyes Bowman. Arguing on behalf of the Appellee, Mr. Donald J. Morrison.
Mr. Bowman, how are you? Ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
May it please the Court. My name is Reese Bowman, and I represent Appellant Defendant Geneva Center 2015 LLC. This appeal turns on the difference between a lowercase p and a capital P. When we capitalize a word in a contract, we do so to give it a defined meaning, a meaning different than how a word is commonly used. And in the contract that is subject to this appeal, the construction, operation, in reciprocal easement agreement, the CREA, which governs the Fabian Crossing Shopping Center, the term party is a defined term, given a precise meaning, a meaning different than party is commonly used. Now, the Circuit Court's denial of Geneva Center's request for prevailing party attorney's fees was based on a misunderstanding of this distinction, and we ask today that the Court correct that error. The sole issue is whether the Circuit Court erred by denying Geneva Center leave to file an attorney fee petition under Section 24.5 of the CREA, a provision that expressly applies to any person, not just a party, as the CREA defines both terms.
It's any person that is touched or concerned by the document, right?
It's any, under Section 14.4, it's any, person is defined generally as any entity, right. Any person. But if you're bound by the CREA, that means you have acquired an interest in the real estate. You are a person who purchases a lot in the shopping center. And that's provided by Section 14.4. And the Circuit Court concluded that under the American rule, attorney's fees are not recoverable unless an express contract or statutory provision provides for it. Secondly, only parties to a contract are bound by its terms. Third, Bear Valley is not a party to the CREA using the lowercase p undefined term. And four, therefore, defendants are not entitled to attorney's fees under Section 24.5.
But the 24.5 is the fee-shifting provision, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And they're saying that, you're saying that that runs with the land.
Yes. Section 24.5, every single burden in the CREA runs with the land. The court,
including the fee-shifting.
Absolutely. As the I believe there's the First District Appellate Court in Yorkshire Village explicitly held, attorney fee shifting provisions, this in a condominium declaration, runs with the land, and it applies to the enforcement of other provisions in that declaration. So, and this court reviews the Circuit Court's decision de novo because this is a pure question of contract interpretation. And the CREA defines two terms that I think are critical here. First, party, and second, person. Party is defined at Section 1.14 of the CREA as developer or venture, and parties mean both of the foregoing or any successor person to such party acquiring any interest of a party in or any portion of such party's parcel, excluding any person owning any peripheral parcel, and except as otherwise provided in Section 14.7. Now, Bear Valley is the owner of Lot 4 in the shopping center, which is defined as the peripheral parcel. It's undisputedly not a capital P party under the CREA. And Section 1.18 defines person, as individuals, partnerships, firms, associations, corporations, and other forms of business or government organization or entity, Bear Valley is indisputably a person under Section 1.18.
And so it seems that person is used to distinguish between developer. For some reason, it's important that there were a developer party and a venture party. I'm not sure if that's in the record. If it is, why that's important? If it's in the record, I apologize. I don't know.
It is in the record, and it's actually not particularly important to this issue before the court. The issue is whether or not Bear Valley is a party. And it's not a party. So I did not mean
by asking that question that it had legal relevance.
Okay.
It certainly was a matter of curiosity.
Yes.
The agreement's very complex.
And so the issue is, this shopping center was developed by I believe it was in the late 70s or early 80s, and Venture Department Store was owned one lot in this shopping center, and then the developer owned four of the remaining lots, and then there was this lot for peripheral parcel. So anyone who owned the entirety of the Venture lot, which is lot one, my client, they're a party, or the entirety of the rest of the lots, excluding lot four, is a party.
And perhaps by corollary or inference, a person is someone involved in the shopping center, which I use advisedly so as to make it clear it's not the developer or the venture. That is a person, capital P?
Yes, so Geneva Center is both a party and a person. Actually, all of us in the Korea are defined as persons. Any business we would own or be related to are also persons under the Korea, but we're not bound by the Korea. Not all of our businesses are. Any business or person that acquires an interest, who purchases a lot, is a person that is also bound by the Korea. So my client's a person bound by the Korea. Mr. Morrison's client, Bear Valley, is a person bound by the Korea. But only my client is a capital P party because it owns the entire venture parcel.
So Bear Valley is not exempt as a person of interest in Fabian Crossing.
No, they are a person just like Geneva Center is. They are bound by
the Korea.
They are bound by the Korea. Yes.
Under your reading of the Korea, Bear Valley has no right to bring any claim relating to the Korea because it's not a party. Yet, if it nevertheless brings such a claim and loses on other grounds, as was the case in this case, it's liable for the prevailing person's attorney's fees. Why is that not an unfair result?
Well, it's so section 14.3 is what you're referring to. 14.3 says who has standing to bring claims. Bear Valley doesn't have a standing to bring a claim. They brought and they lost on that basis. So they need to pay attorney's fees. It's a just result. They're two separate concepts. 14.3 deals with standing to bring claims. Section 24.5 says, okay, if you win a claim or lose a claim, here are how attorney's fees are allocated. And section 14.4 says, if you own a lot in the shopping center, you're bound by its obligations. Now, and so with regard to the attorney fee shifting provision at issue, section 24.5 states that if any person shall institute any action or proceeding against any other person relating to violations, threatened violations, or failure of performance under this REA, the prevailing person may recover attorney's fees. So importantly, every reference to person in section 24.5 is capitalized, invoking the defined term under section 1.18. Now, the circuit court conflated party and person as they're both defined in the Correa. It treated the finding that Bear Valley is not a party capital P party, as dispositive of whether Section 24.5 applies. But Section 24.5 does not say party. It says person. That conflation was the reversible error that we're asking you to correct. Now, Bear Valley also, in addition to that Section 14.3 argument saying that if they don't have standing, why is it fair that they would pay attorney's fees to lose a claim that I just spoke about, Bear Valley also argues that even if it is bound by the CREA being a lowercase party, it is not bound by the attorney fee shifting provision of Section 24.5 because it doesn't run with the land. Now, there are three elements for a provision there are three necessary elements for a covenant to run with the land. First, intent. And the CREA specifically provides that intent, explicitly saying in Section 14.4 that the REA and its burdens run with the land and bind all persons having or acquiring an interest in the shopping center. This shows clear intent. Secondly, the attorney fee shifting covenant affects the use, value, or enjoyment of the property. Here, a lot owner like Geneva Center knows that if it complies with the CREA, it is protected if it's sued by, for instance, Bear Valley, saying that it violated the CREA and Bear Valley was wrong about that. Geneva Center has the essentially a type of insurance, knowing that its attorney's fees for an expensive 7-year-long litigation
How much of that was involved defending against declaratory relief?
So we didn't get into the specific amounts within the circuit court. But you're
not arguing that there was no declaratory relief sought, right?
There was certainly declaratory relief sought. The issue is, and we can go to that specifically, that Bear Valley never limited its action to declaratory
relief. They sought damages.
It sought damages in every single one of its complaints. Most recently, its third amended complaint sought $1 million in damages.
Sought attorney's fees.
It sought attorney's fees under paragraph 122. It specifically invoked section 24.5 as the basis for attorney's fees, showing that it believed attorney's fees in that section were applicable to this action. It was a bit of a surprise, I think, that the circuit court ruled in the way it did, because in the motion for summary judgment briefs, neither party argued that Section 24 didn't apply.
Bear Valley kind of flipped it, right?
Well, after it got this ruling and we moved to reconsider, then, you know, the arguments changed, and as they continue to do in this appellate court proceeding. So Bear Valley asks for strict construction of Section 24.5, and we agree on this. Strict construction means that the carve-out exempts only truly declaratory claims that are truly declaratory in nature. The carve-out must be read as written. It exempts a declaratory relief action or cause of action. Claims for monetary damages, injunctive relief, asking to rewrite the CREA so that Bear Valley as Lot 4 has the right to have a consent right to any amendment, changing the CREA's provisions, that's more than declaratory relief, and that's why Section 24.5 applies to this action. In closing, the CREA uses person and party as distinct defined terms. Section 24.5 applies to the defined term persons, and Bear Valley is undisputedly a person, as defined in the CREA. The circuit court erred by holding that because Bear Valley is undisputedly not a capital P party as defined in the CREA, Bear Valley is not subject to the CREA's attorney fee shifting provision. Further, the fee provision runs with the land, and CREA's direct declaratory relief carve-out does not insulate Bear Valley from 6 years of damage claims, tort claims, and attempts to rewrite the CREA. We respectfully ask this court to partially reverse the circuit court's order, grant Geneva Center leave to file a fee petition under Section 24.5, and remand this action for determination of the amount of attorney's fees and costs Geneva Center is entitled to recover. Thank you.
What do you say to Bear Valley saying, we just filed this suit because we wanted to reserve our rights of the easement, you know, for the court to clarify or to declare which of these rights, you know, we're entitled to? What do you say to that?
Well, that would be an entirely different complaint than what was filed. Again, they filed a 12-count complaint. Only one complaint sought declaratory relief. So if that's their position, that doesn't match with the record.
Inconsistent with what was filed?
Yes.
What is your argument that the non-declaratory counts enforced violations of the Korea? I'm concerned about that. You know, I agree, and I think you were careful in the way you stated it's strict construction. Doesn't mean we don't read the words to mean what they should, but I am concerned about not reading them more broadly than perhaps they were intended.
Well, and I think the key language in Section 24 is relating to. The Section 24 scope covers claims relating to violations, threatened violations, or enforcement. This is broad relational language that encompasses all of Bear Valley's claims.
So even the bad faith?
Absolutely. I mean, this was bad. They were alleging that Geneva Center acted in bad faith in enacting this amendment, which allowed a new outlaw drive-through restaurant on the shopping center, and that was a bad faith amendment and bad faith use of the Korea. So it goes directly to the Geneva Center's use and enforcement and use of the Korea amendment procedures, and Bear Valley acting that or claiming that we acted in bad faith and are liable for $1 million plus in damages for this third amendment is a third amendment to the Korea. It goes directly back to it, and it certainly relates to the Korea.
Anything further, Justice Burkett? Thank you. We'll have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Great.
Mr. Morris. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. May it please this honorable court, Mr. Bowman, Mr. Thomas. Setting aside for a moment this issue of capital P versus small p, person versus party, whether or not the covenants run with the land, that's been fully briefed. I understand the arguments on both sides. Where Bear Valley gets stuck is the actual language of Section 24.5. In any action relating to violations of the REA, threatened violations of the REA, or failure of performance of the REA. And then it says, and only in that event. And that's limiting language, in addition to the fact that it's to be strictly construed, it says, and only in that event is the prevailing party entitled to attorney's fees. Now, even though Mr. Bowman acknowledges that section must be strictly construed, he then points to that language relating to and tries to just broaden it out to mean it could be absolutely anything. The drafters could have easily included in any action relating to violations of the REA or breaches of duty arising therefrom or any tortious causes of action arising therefrom. They didn't do that. And throughout before we got to this attorney's fees issue, the defendants repeatedly reinforced the fact that not only are we not a party, we kept feeling like in this case and in McDonald's case, like we were this redheaded stepchild who didn't get invited to the party, but then kept being reminded constantly, you're not invited to the party, you're not a party. And this court ruled that way in the McDonald's case.
I did this original appeal, so I would have been happy were I not invited to that party,
right.
Mr. Morrison.
Right. But I'm just going to quote a few of the language that they used, and this is in the record on page 1584. In the briefing on the motion to dismiss the amended complaint, despite the fact that Bear Valley does not allege any actual breach of contract by any party under the Corral. 1596 of the record. Bear Valley does not allege a breach of contract claim, nor could it as a non-party, citing the section 4.3 that only a party can bring an action to enforce the terms of the Corral. In the record at 2416, Bear Valley never alleged that defendants threatened to modify any easements in violation of the Corral. And then finally, on page 13 of its reply brief in this case, when the defendants were trying to say that this fee provision runs with the land, they say section 24.5 is not a generic fee-shifting provision. It applies exclusively, their words, it applies exclusively to disputes about violations, threatened violations, or failure of performance under the Corral. And now there's an about face. And they try to ignore the law that says that it must be strictly construed to improperly broaden it. So not only is it not fair that we're told not only that we couldn't take part in any amendments to the Corral, but we don't have constantly in this litigation. Bear Valley, you don't have any rights under you. What are you doing? You have no rights under this Corral. You're not a capital P party.
You don't have a vote, basically.
Pardon?
You don't have a vote, basically, right? You don't have a vote.
We don't have a vote. Right. You don't get to come in, you don't have a vote. But they made it more than that.
But you are a person. Bear Valley is a person.
Yes.
Under 24.
Right. And that's why I just keep coming back to the language of the statute. And not only do our causes of action are from...
Statute or contract?
Our causes of action were for two... The original complaint was two counts of declaratory judgment and six counts of either iterations of breach of fiduciary duty or breach of good faith and fair dealing. And they say that relates to a violation of the... Even if you say that that could... Anything that relates to that. How do those... No one's explained to me how those causes of action relate to a violation or a threatened violation. No one has pointed out to me anywhere in any of our complaints where we say to either of these defendants, you violated this term of the RAIR. You threatened to violate this term of the CREA, or that you failed to perform this under the CREA. We maybe were whining and saying, well, it's not fair. I get that. But the breach of fiduciary duty and breach of good faith and fair dealing has nothing to do with any violations of the Corral. And then we get to this issue of the declaratory judgment actions. And I think it's very telling, and this is on page 16 of the reply brief. Because, of course, section 24.5 goes on to specifically accept declaratory judgment actions. They say Bear Valley cannot escape the import of its pleading by styling them as declaratory relief claims. After they win summary judgment on the declaratory relief claim, they say it's not really a declaratory relief claim. You styled it that way. Go back and look at the record of what the arguments were on the summary judgment. They claim that, oh, it's really injunctive relief. They didn't argue that we didn't meet the elements of injunctive relief. They argued extensively and almost exclusively that we couldn't meet the elements of an actual controversy. They treated this as if they were declaratory judgment actions the whole time until they got to the fee-shifting provision and they realized that it didn't help them and they switched gears and says, you're really not asking for that. But you want summary judgment because you convinced Judge Finas that there was no actual controversy here. So, running with the land, point out the Illinois Supreme Court's decision in the Streams Sports Club, which I think is very important, because while it's basically a lot of times used for the proposition that these that financial monetary covenants can run with the land. They can, okay? But the Supreme Court in Streams didn't do that just because it was a monetary payment. They did it only because the payments funded a facility with a substantive physical nexus to the burdened parcels. And I quote, "The recreational facility that is the subject of this lawsuit is adjacent to the condominium units and is used by the residents of the condominiums. And the sports club is part of a common building plan that the defendant was aware of at the time she purchased her unit. The fees touched and concerned the land because they paid for something that physically enhanced the use, value, and enjoyment of the condominium units." That doesn't apply to a simple fee-shifting provision. And so I think in order for the...
Even if it enforces covenants of the Korea.
Well, the fee-shifting provision doesn't really enforce covenants.
Well, it supports it, perhaps, arguably. It enables it, better enables it.
It puts the owner in a better financial position because they're not like they're.
It might
not,
also discourage, breaches, if you will, or it might discourage activity that might was decided to be enforcing or violating or relating to a violation. Excuse me.
And I would completely agree with that. I think it not only deters violations, but it also deters people from bringing claims that are frivolous. But we didn't, until now, we never had a right to do any of that. We weren't a party, so we couldn't even bring a claim. And they really didn't argue that in the trial court. The arguments were never that square. It wasn't, you can't bring this claim for violation of the RAIA. The reason is because we didn't. We brought tort actions. We brought a declaratory judgment action and a tort action. And whether or not we are a capital P party, a small P party, a capital P person, a small P person, whether or not that runs with the land, obviously, if Bear Valley prevails on that, if you affirm Judge Venus for using his rationale, we don't even have to get there, right? And if it doesn't run with the land, we don't have to get there. But even if you say, no, Bear Valley, you're not a capital P party, you're a capital P person, so this applies to you. And even if you say no, Bear Valley, this provision runs with the land. That means we're bound by it. It doesn't mean that we brought an action that is set forth in that statute, which under the American rule must be strictly construed, which says that in any action relating to violations of RAIA, threatened violations, or failure of performance, does not include any tortious conduct, which they could have, and then uses the language, and only in that event is the prevailing party entitled to attorney's fees.
At page 20 of your brief, you argue that, quote, the core of this litigation and Bear Valley's primary objective has been to preserve the rights of the easement and obtain a declaration of those rights from the court. Right?
That's the one thing that's constant from start to finish, because we started with it, and after the McDonald's litigation, and after we decided to get rid of some of those facts, we were still left with, even after the McDonald's litigation, and we're not able to say it's not fair anymore. You ruled that we're not a party. We still had an issue with that easement, right?
But neither your initial complaint nor your prior appeal involved any claims concerning the easements, right?
I don't know that for Justice Burkett. I'm sorry, I don't know the precise answer to that question. I thought it was. I thought it was part of the.
We're trying to prevent the Oberweis restaurant from opening, right?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, what happened? This is not on the record, but I mean, the reason it got added is because when we were negotiating with McDonald's. He said, hey, will you buy this place? And they're like, we're not going to buy it. They can landlock us. So we went, okay, we better beef up our declaratory judgment action, right? So I can't say for a fact that it was there, but it was there for a reason, not just, oh, we're trying to make this a declaratory judgment action to accept, to stay out of the attorney fee shifting. It was a legitimate concern. And actually, the way the Judge Phoenix ruled, the reason why we didn't appeal is because he basically ruled, says there's no actual controversy. They can't do it. So we record that judgment, and now we got some. Now we can say to our purchasers, hey, bad news is we didn't get our DJ. Good news is we got an order saying they can't do it. Mm-hmm. So that's really all I have, unless anyone has any more questions.
Any further questions? No. Justice Long, Justice Burkett. Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Mr. Bowman, you have an opportunity for rebuttal. You know, I want you to, if you don't mind, how do you distinguish the Streams case that Mr. Morrison so heavily relies upon, both in his briefs and here at Orals?
I apologize. It's Streams v.
The Streams Sports Club versus Richmond.
Yes, yes. And so, I mean, the issue, the Yorkshire Village case ruled directly on this issue. I mean, the Streams.
Excuse me.
That court ruled that the covenant to pay annual membership fees ran with the land. That's fine. I mean, that's not what we're dealing with. It's a distinct issue from the issue of whether or not attorney's fees and the burden and benefits of an attorney fee shifting provision in a condominium declaration or some other way that's covenant recorded on title runs with the land. The courts have directly dealt with this issue, and I don't think Streams is analogously, certainly doesn't squarely deal with the issue of attorney's fees. And so, again, the court in Yorkshire Village directly ruled on whether or not an attorney fee shifting provision runs with the land. And again, the reason why it does is it provides a benefit to unit owners knowing that if they are complying with the governing documents, they won't be, and if they are subject to litigation, as long as they did the right thing and they prevail, they're going to have the benefit of that. It's like insurance. You don't necessarily use it on I have the benefit of car insurance. I'm not use that claim, but it runs it benefits me even though it's not something that I've used often. And I want to go back to really what this case is about, which was discussed previously. It was not about Geneva Center threatening to landlock McDonald's. That was the basis for them amending their third, or amending the complaint for their fourth time. That was also their second amended complaint was also on that basis. We deposed McDonald's attorney that apparently told Mr. Morrison that this was the issue, that this was an issue. After deposing the attorney, he said, I never said that. No one from Geneva Center has ever said that. Geneva Center's representative, George Zilich, was deposed, and he said that he would not have the power, Geneva Center would not have the power to landlock McDonald's. He never threatened it, and it would be uneconomical and stupid to do so. So this was a manufactured basis, really, to keep this case going by Bear Valley Partners, because what they lost on was what this case was really about, is that McDonald's was paying Bear Valley 50% reduced rent. Geneva Center, with Wakanda, exercised its right to enact this Third Amendment to the Correa, adding this Oberweis drive-through burger joint and ice cream parlor, and that resulted in McDonald's exercising their non-compete, which caused Bear Valley to fight that ordinance. caused Bear Valley to sue McDonald's, and it caused Bear Valley to sue Geneva Center and Wakanda. That's what this case was really about, and this goes directly to the issues that 24.5 protects. And 24.5, again, broadly relates, deals with any action relating to threatened violations or actual violations of the Correa, and it very limitedly does not apply to declaratory judgment actions. What is this action about? Well, 11 of the 12 counts in its first complaint were about threatened or potential violations, commercial torts related to Bear Valley, I'm sorry, Geneva Center exercising its rights under the Correa. And that's made very clear in a section of the complaint here, starting at paragraphs 127 and going through 134. According to Bear Valley, it was never the intent and purpose of the Correa to permit a restaurant with drive-through on Lot 1 or to permit subdivision of Lot 1 to permit a restaurant with drive-through. However, in paragraph 128, amending the Correa to permit a restaurant with drive-through on Lot 1 is not necessary to create the purpose, create, to carry out the purposes of the Correa. The third Correa amendment is not necessary to create the purposes of the Correa. And then the rest of the paragraphs here argue how the Geneva Center and Wakanda lacked authority to do what they did by enacting this third Correa amendment. So because this this action certainly concerns threatened or actual violations of the Correa and is not limited to declaratory judgment, Section 24 prevailing attorney fee provision applies here. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Morrison, Mr. Bowman, for your time here today. We will take the case under consideration, render a decision in due course.